Right, what we did last week was start talking about our our history and our roots. Let's change the input. Let's hope it works this week, yeah. Obviously, can't go over everything from last week. I wanted to do it in a week, but Deb was sharing, so it was going to take two. So. fighting talk, yeah. But we've been on a prophetic journey, and it says in Amos 3:7, surely the Lord God does nothing unless he reveals his secret counsel to his servants, the prophets. And we have been on a journey as a church when we started in 1993 and onwards, looking for progressive revelation of God. You know, we're not content with just hearing what we heard before. We want to continue to hear. And God continues to speak. And it's really important that we listen and we obey. And Isaiah 61, I'll just read verse 1 to you, but it's Isaiah 61, 1 to 3. Really, this verse was sort of our DNA as a church, the thing that God put into our hearts at the beginning. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because the Lord has anointed me to bring good news to the afflicted, sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, proclaim liberty to the captives, and freedom to prisoners. Now, that verse has developed in our understanding over the years. You know, what we thought that verse meant when we first had it bears little comparison now to what we're doing in terms of an outworking of that revelation that God wants to set people free. And our ministry really here, and everything in terms of every ministry that is anywhere, I believe, has to be based in this, because this was Jesus' ministry, and we are here to do the works of Jesus. Prophetic vision in 1997, we are here for you. That was a changing point, a turning point for us as a church, that we were here for the community. And in July 1999, Graham Jones's word that you're a Heineken church reaching people that other churches can't reach. And we took that on board. Now, for me, those scriptures and those prophetic words changed my heart and changed my view of what Isaiah 61 was all about. And so I received that as a heavenly vision from God. And that became a foundational thing in me and a foundational thing in what we did as a church, an apostolic vision. And we've seen that develop over the time. And I believe all visions that we have as individuals are rooted in that mission of Jesus, because Jesus has sent us to do the same things that he did. So it has to be based in bringing good news and demonstrating the love and the heart of God, setting people free. Now, that change of heart was also a change of focus, and we personally, for myself, began to change focus into looking to how could we bless the community. And in February 2000, we set up a soup kitchen with several other churches. We did one Monday a month. It was just on a Monday. And we did the first Monday of the month, which then I discovered was most of the bank holidays and things, which made it really hard to do. But actually, I was the only one of the church then who really did this. And I found some people to help me, from people who were on the fringes of the church, actually, who were from the group of people that we were trying to reach. And we faithfully, for about 18 months, every first Monday of the month, we used the Salvation Army building in town, and we gave beans on toast and spaghetti and things like that. But what it did, it gave me an opportunity to talk to people. And at those times, we had like 5, 6, sometimes up to 10, 12 people come. It wasn't masses of numbers, but we began to reach out and to touch people. And that caused us really to listen to God and to change our whole prophetic direction, because God had spoken to us in the beginning about not having a building, about being everywhere but not having a building. And we had to change that, and God spoke to us really clearly. Particularly, he spoke to me, and I just sort of struggled with it, because, like, well, this is different from what you said before. But actually, God really spoke, and in August 2000 we moved to the building in Trinity Street, which became Freedom Center, a place where we could base our ministry to the community, somewhere where we could actually serve and give away. what God had given us. And we didn't know what to do at that point in time, but that's where we started. Changed the name of the church from Freedom Fellowship to Freedom Family Church. And then we began doing things in the thing. And the first thing we did was a youth ministry called The Loft, in which we decorated the upstairs of the building. And we used to get, I don't know, how many get? 50, 60, 70 kids in on a Friday night, and sort of teenagers. And we sowed a lot of seeds. And I believe, again, those seeds are out there in the community, ready for God to bring fruit in the future. And at this point in time, having talked to people on the soup run and soup kitchen, and people were saying, okay, I asked them a question, what is it you need and what do you want? And they all basically started to say, well, we need somewhere to go. You know, we've just got nowhere to go. And so that started really when we then in the building start to do a weekly soup kitchen on a Wednesday. And again, I used to cook the food at home, spaghetti bolognese and chili and turkey, chicken curry and various things like that on a Tuesday, and then take it in the building. We used to have rice and stuff. And that was where we were in those days. Just did that on Wednesdays. But again, it gave us an opportunity to reach out and see what God wanted to do. And we started to pursue things there. And that's where Deb got drawn into it, if you want to share anything on that. Because she didn't want anything to do with it.
It's knowing where to share, really. I said last week that my testimony along this journey has been one that could be summed up in, I like my comfort zone, I don't want to move, and God kicking me up the bum. And oh, okay then. Mike would say due to stubbornness, but I've actually been thinking about it quite a lot, and it was a bit of stubbornness, but actually my journey probably is summed up through fear as well, that, you know, I'm comfortable where I am, I don't really want any more. And just go back to the loft, that we started the youth work in the loft, and my reaction that I'll share to each thing is possibly the same. It's, well, I hope you've got enough support, because I'm not getting involved. That's but whatever it was going to be. It's like, oh, I've got enough on my plate. I'm not getting involved in that. So I've not started off involved in the beginning of any of the things that we talk about. But for some strange reason, I would say to Mike, well, I hope the people that you've got that are reliable and are not going to let you down, because I'm not being involved. And then a few months down the road, it would be like, well, I suppose I better come then. And then in that step of me being involved, God would completely change my heart, and I'd suddenly get this passion that I should have had anyway, really. But anyway, that's just me. That's the way it was. But for my involvement in all of these things, you know, I said last week, and I can remember the very first day that I met Mandy, and I think that's when God started to change my heart. And she's not here again, so I can't ask her permission, but it's too bad if she's not here. And on that day, you know, I'd felt that God had given me Isaiah 61, and I'd felt that my vision or my destiny, if you like, is bind up the brokenhearted, bring the good news, set the captives free, release the prisoners. That is something that was already burned in my heart, and I'd really sown my life into doing that, but most of it involved with just broken Christians, really, broken people that we came across that were Christians, and seeing them healed and restored. But the day that I met Mandy, I saw brokenness in a whole new way, and she was my first experience of anyone with an addiction, and I realized how little I knew. And then that was a journey that I began back then, and I dealt with broken people, but I'd never dealt with the brokenness in addiction and all the different avenues and areas that brought. So for me, that was my journey. So I God started to change my heart then, but it took a while for me to get fully involved in any of these things. And I actually got involved with the soup kitchen by default, because when Mike set it up, make sure you got enough help, because I'm not getting involved in that. And then it wasn't long before the person that had taken responsibility for cooking all the meals, because she did it first, Mike, we didn't do it at home till after that, said it was too much for her and she couldn't be involved. So my first involvement was Mike and I used to cook every Tuesday night. We used to make the meal for the next day at home and then trundle it down there in this great big pan, didn't we? And from there, from doing that, I then began to go on a Wednesday to cook the meal in the building once a week. And me and Jeremy were a good team back then. Is Jeremy still here? We were a good team then, weren't we, Jeremy? We used to do that. And that, are you going to go on to say how that worked? Because this was quite strange in itself, wasn't it? We did one day a week. That's what we felt that we could do, and we did a soup kitchen, which lasted about an hour and a half, and which was a massive step for us. Bearing in mind, you know, we'd never done anything like that before, and then we just realised actually this is ridiculous. We're feeding people for an hour and a half, and then they have to leave. And in talking to them, it's just like, can you stay open? Can you do some more? Can you? What else can you do? So we decided for one day a week to keep open, didn't we? And because the room was really small, we were in Trinity Street then. It's where Define Gym is now, for any of you that might know, at the back of Bellmeadow Car Park. That's where we were. And we used to have to throw everyone out. Well, we cleared all the tables away and set up. We managed to get a pool table and a table tennis table. So everybody had to leave. Well, we changed the room into what then became, and you know, social interaction then in the afternoon. But my journey in this bit as well, it's just incredible what God does. But I went and I agreed that I would go in the kitchen and I'd cook the food, but I would stay in the kitchen. I'm not going out of the kitchen. And
the kitchen was just a bar, really. Sounds
that's,
really
that's
grand.
That's where I can go. No, but that's where I can be. And then after that, we decided that we needed to serve people food for various reasons. And it was like, oh, fine, okay, well, I'll do that one. And so I ventured out from behind the kitchen to serve people their food. And it was just so slow steps for me. But I've looked at it and I've prayed about it a lot, you know, as you do when you sort of look back on your journey with God. And it was fear. I was just, what have I got to offer? Who want to speak to me? Nobody will relate to me. It's just, no, I can't do this. I just can't do this. And I just think, you know, God is so amazing, isn't he? That slowly he just breaks all those things off us. But also those tactics and schemes of the enemy to just hold us back. And for so many years I listened to that. I can't speak to people. I don't relate to people. They won't relate to me. I've got nothing to say. And, you know, and I believed it for a really long time. So I just want to encourage you. What I started out in my journey when we moved here bears no resemblance whatsoever to where I am now. And I think that for some of us now, you know, we're in that phase where God's going to change things around. And what we may have done in the past bears no resemblance to where we're going in the future. So I just want to throw that one out there as a testimony. I think some people need to hear that.
Okay. So a lot of my time then began to be sown into the community. So I had less involvement in church ministry and a lot more involvement in actually getting things done and changed in the community. So I was involved in a social inclusion group with the local council, drug implementation group with the drug action team, and you know, I started to become a bit of a nuisance to people because I started to actually point out all the things that people should be doing that they weren't, and it was their statutory responsibility to do. In the end, we ended up doing what they should be doing, but that was part of the journey. Then, actually, during this time in 2002, I started a discipleship group on Sunday morning at 7 o'clock. And I used to get up and cook bacon rolls. And there was a group of people we used to meet. And it was a bit of a think tank as we were looking to pursue what is church. You know, what we wanted a new vision of church. Church is not buildings. We realized that. But actually, for most of us, church was meetings. It was things that we went to. And actually, God challenged us. Church isn't meetings. We meet as a church and we meet as individuals. Actually, in that time, I decided to disband the eldership that we had because actually it was operating with our old view of church. So we looked do that. We stopped all our midweek meetings and we just allowed people to be themselves and to hear God for themselves. So one person, who actually isn't here today, said, for 20 years I've been a Christian and I've always been told what to do, and now you're not telling me what to do, and I don't know who I am. And it was a bit like that. It was finding a new identity. You know, who were we? We needed to listen to God for ourselves. We had a personal relationship with God. So this was a really challenging time. And during that time, we had to let some things die. There were some things that we were good at and things that we did. And some of that was music, our reliance on music. So that actually worship was what we did on a Sunday rather than actually it's what we do all week. We let focus on meetings die, and it was a really hard time for a lot of people because I was trusting to a process that God had stirred in my heart and I didn't know where it was going. I just trusted God and followed. And it was really difficult at the time. But we looked at seeing that church is not just what we do together here. It's beyond the congregation. It's everywhere. We are church 24/7. It's like we're always part of the people of God. You know, we're always that. We're always there to demonstrate the love and heart of God. We're always there to be God's representatives on earth, wherever we are, in our homes, in our jobs, in our neighborhoods. We are here to demonstrate God. And it was a challenge at that time, some of the things that went on. And then in March 2002, we got connected with Life for the World Trust, who were a Christian organization who were involved with addictions and residential rehabilitation. And they came down and they gave us some really good training, because at that point, we knew we needed to step out and start doing more. And again, we were challenged. Could we do this? But it was like, for me, it's like, if I get something in my heart, it's like, okay, let's go and do it. But we got some training. And then in June 2002, Prepared to Progress, P2P, was born. That's what the projects, Freedom Social Projects, used to be called. I had met with the Department of Employment, whatever they are, Job Seeker Plus, whatever, and they had a program called Progress to Work, which was for people with addictions. But they didn't have any people who were stable and managed on addictions who they could work with. So I said, well, we can get you some stable, managed people. And so a statement that was. But actually, I got some funding through the European Social Fund, and we started a drop-in center 3 afternoons a week. I advertised, we employed people. We had Dave Sams, who's a pastor of another church in town, who also came from an addictive background. He worked with us in that. And Alan and Jill, who are now in Australia, started a daily structured day program. And I think that's where we first met Kim, I think, on that structured day program. And you know, we again stepped out. Now, within 2 months, all the funding was lost. We had £3,600 a month, and suddenly it was withdrawn. And we had a decision to make. Okay, are we going to trust God and carry on because we believe this is the heart of God, or are we going to stop? Well, of course, we didn't stop. We trusted God, and we carried on. This is the time when God called me to pray for 3 of the hardest nuts that we had in the drop-in at the time. One of them sitting at the back. One of them is over the road, in the church over the road, I hope. And another one I had the privilege of baptizing. And I prayed every day for these 3 guys. I actually didn't really like them, because they were a real pain in the backside for us as a project and for me. Always have to keep my eye on. Deb was like, keep your eye on them, watch what they're doing. And it's like, because, you know, Chris, you've heard Chris's testimony. You know what he was like. But I prayed, and I prayed, and I carried on praying. Even though I didn't see particularly anything, I just carried on praying for those 3 guys. And then in March 2003, Deb joins P2P as an office temp. She's still here. You want to say anything about that?
Yeah, again, here I am. At that point in time, there was a lady that was administrator, wasn't she? And she had a job. She got a job, full-time job, working for
KCM, Kenneth Copeland Ministries.
Kenneth Copeland Ministries in Bath, somewhere up country, somewhere. And there were 3 months left on her contract, weren't there? And Mike said, there's only 3 months to go. It's not worth advertising it anywhere, but I really feel you could go and do what she's done just for 3 months, just till the contract finishes. And I'm like, okay. So I that's when I started in the office. Well, it's not cupboard. Really an office, was it? It's in a cupboard. if any of you knew the old building, it was a cupboard. It was my safe cupboard anyway, so that's where I started. And I started just doing a few statistics and just office stuff for 12 hours a week. And that was in 2003. Things have changed a little bit, but that's the point in time where I actually started work. That's the point in time where I met Mr. Saunders. And those were interesting times.
They were interesting times. Okay. And in September that year, I made a connection with Tear Fund, a national organization, international Christian organization, and I got some money off them. Got a 3-year funding connection, and that in November we appointed Phil as project coordinator, and that's when I sort of handed over the sort of day-to-day running of things to Phil, who's very good at putting in all the things that I'm not very good at putting in, which is foundational policies and procedures and all that stuff. So I have a heart to go and do stuff. He's got the sort of the detail And he did a really good job in setting things up and moving. And then in 2004, we started open 4 afternoons a week, and we started to do daily food. At this point in time, the drop-in was still food on a Wednesday, but the rest of the week we just provided a place for people to come and to talk, and we looked to help people. We ran a relapse prevention course during the morning, so we did various things during this time, but we looked to reach out to more. And for me, at that point in time, these are some of the photos. That's Dave Sams there in the background in his usual pose. That was a very common pose, any of you know Dave. That's me in the middle of two pool tables. Alan and Jill, who did the structured day program, was over in the Strand at the COC building over there. That was our kitchen. Basically, it was basically a bar, nothing much more. There's Deb in her cupboard. Still smiling. Now that person there is the incredible Mick, who was our champion of Scrabble. He used to come in and play Scrabble with the guys during that time and talk, and connections go back quite a long time with people. That's Deb and Phil in the cupboard. And that's Sean. And there was, if you recognize that man. He doesn't like those pictures because it reminds him of the past. But actually, it also reminds us of where things have changed and where things have come from, because that's a transformation of lives. So basically, Sean got saved in Trinity Street there. And in 2004, I became a trustee of House of Heroes. Now, this was, again, a big step. But it was a thing that I really felt that there was a connection in the spirit about what God had for us as a church to do with the ministry of House of Heroes and helping people in addiction. Chris got saved in Channing's Wood in 2005, and that was the second of the people I'd been praying for salvation. It was great to visit him in prison, and so it was just a really great time. And in 2005, we moved from the old building to the Freedom Center here. Obviously, it didn't quite look like it does now. There's been a lot of development since then. But we moved. It's a big step of faith. What we needed to fund this building was, I think, 7 times what we were paying for the old building. And, you know, 5 years later, we're actually still here, which is a testimony to God's provision and God's blessing, even though there have been a few short intakes of breath along the way. And, God, where are you? Are you going to show up? He has, because this is his heart. You know, we are following his heart. Now, 2006, for me, it was what I would call the dark night of the soul. Now, some people have dark nights of the soul that last for a few weeks or a few months. For me, it lasted the whole year. So I really struggled for that whole year. God brought up things in my past, things about betrayal from my childhood and family stuff, and a lot of deep hurts, which really sort of, I think, challenged me where I was. And there was an occasion where Chris had come out of prison, and he'd come and joined the church here. And one Sunday morning, someone who was a nurse at the hospital, or some nursing orderly or something at the hospital, who saw Chris the last time when he was 9 stone and was basically diagnosed to die, didn't believe that he was still alive. And actually, he was part of the church. So they came on one Sunday morning. And I can remember standing up here on that Sunday morning and actually feeling, before this happened, I was feeling, I'm fed up. I've had enough. Church is wonderful, but except the people. It's like, you know, God's great, but people, they're such a hassle. You know, it's like, and I was really feeling sorry for myself. And I just felt, I've had enough. It's like everything I try and do, people misconstrue, and it's all my fault all the time. And that was it. I was going to, like, I'm fed up with it. But actually, when I saw the reaction, we were in the kitchen back there, of this lady when she saw Chris, and actually she could not believe the transformation. Actually, it said, I will put up with everything because I want to see people's lives transformed. And it was a real challenge. And it's like, God, I mean, I just cried. I stood up here and I just cried. Some people didn't like me crying, so it was totally inappropriate. But actually, hey, I'm just going to do what I do. And it's like, I just shared what was going on in the inside me, but actually it is worth all the hassle to see people changed. You know, and it's when a couple of weeks ago we actually said how many people have become Christians in the last year, and like 20, 30 people put their hand up. It's an awesome thing to see that miracle of transformation. And we want to see more and more of that. And it's great to see people's lives over the years being transformed. Sometimes it's a roller coaster, sometimes it's up and down. But actually, we've seen people still working at it and going for it. In 2007, after this, we had a breakthrough. And really, I really felt God call me in the whole area of discipleship to just give away what God had given me, rather than just teaching, to actually meet with people individually, because we're all called to be and to make disciples. And we need to do that with people. In 2007, we opened the CAP Center and also CAP Money courses. And in 2008, I became chairman of Churches Together. Now, if anyone would told me that I would have been chairman of Churches Together, I would not have believed them, because it's the last thing I want to do or would want to do. But actually, right back in the beginning when we met the Brazilians and our connection with people, it's always been to bring unity amongst the church and to be part of that. And so this was sort of a full circle thing, really. I'd sort of come from looking to encourage churches to work in together to being asked to be the chairman. And this is like 20 or 30 churches from all different traditions, from the Catholic tradition right through to the Quakers at the other end. Pretty extreme. But we're here to bless and work together as the church in North Devon to bless our community and see transformation. That's our vision, to see community transformation and revival. So that was an excellent thing, even though I struggled and I did it under sort of fair much duress, but I'm still chairman after 3 years. So June 2008, we set up a charitable company, Freedom Social Projects. That was the new name of P2P, and that was set up to administer the ministry of the church. We did that, as if any of you know, what happened is the leaders of the church were the members who formed Freedom Social Project, and we still carry spiritual authority for it. And we're out working that and seeing those things happen right now. Freedom Center here is our church building. Freedom Trust has the lease of this building, and it's where FSP, that church ministry, operates. And actually, we will have more church ministries operating here because we want to see more ministries. It's like God has given us a heart. But actually, it's all about what's in our hearts as individuals, expressing those things. And therefore, we want to see many ministries. I'll share that in a couple of weeks' time when we're looking at vision, where we're going. But we work with the government thing, a program called Places for Change. And Phil did a fantastic job in getting lots of finance, sort of, I think probably about 300,000 quid in the end, to actually transform this building and make it a place for change. But actually, it's not just a place for change in one-dimensional change. It's like we want people to change all their lives. And ultimately, our goal is eternal transformation. We want to see people's lives change eternally. So yes, we want to show the love of God and demonstrate God by helping, feeding people, clothing people, educating them, helping them find jobs and employment and accommodation. But ultimately, we want to demonstrate the love of God so that people see that actually it is something more than just the temporal things that matter. There's an eternity and there's a destiny. We know that there is a potential in every single person that God has created to fulfill. And we want to be part of helping people discover their destiny and fulfill it. In 2007-08, I did a whole lot of teaching on Heaven Invades Earth from John 14:12. Jesus saying that we were to do the works that he did and greater works. And that was a sort of a time of sowing and preparation for God to move. And then in April 2008, there was a whole sense of prophetic stirring. And I called a meeting in April, and we came together and we had lots of prophetic pictures about waterfalls and rivers and different things. And God just started to stir us to believe there was something more. He was going to do something more. And I went to a conference after that night. It was actually the Tuesday. Went to a conference in the southeast. Nothing to do with sort of prophetic things, so I thought. It's to do with working with the police as in the community as the church. And I went with a couple of policemen, and had a great time. And then a lady called Deborah Green from City Changers, I think she it works with, she basically just said, look, I want to pray for people. If anyone come forward, I want to pray. So I came forward. I'm sort of up for prayer. So I went, okay, I'll come and pray. I thought she was just going to pray something nice. And she actually prayed over me. And she basically said, right, God has seen your heart. He's seen what you've been crying out for. And he's going to answer. So I'm releasing a healing anointing on you. You're going to see, as a church, an anointing to break the yoke of addiction off people's lives and to see people transformed. So it was like, that was a prophetic word, which sort of rung true in my heart. I came back on the Sunday, those of you who remember, I sort of said, okay, look, this is what God did. I want to give this away. Now, virtually everybody came forward, and actually I was not expecting what actually happened because I felt such an anointing when I prayed, and the power of God really touched people, and it hadn't stopped. You know? It's like it is continued. We did catch the fire as a result of that to give that away to other churches. We got involved in what was going on in Lakeland in terms of the revival with Todd Bentley and things that were happening there. And, you know, God was in that. You know, I can remember going to Chris's house with Phil Sovey, and it's like we went round to have a chat, and it's like Chris was like, well, I haven't really experienced much of this stuff. So we laid hands on him, and he was laughing in the spirit. He couldn't stand up. And that, for him, was one of the first experiences of actually the power of God working in that way, in a tangible way, through the telly. And it's like, you know, people were touching, putting their hands, touching the TV and getting healed and getting anointed, because that was spreading all over the world. And we were part of that, and God has continued that. In 2009, TWOMP, which is an acronym for the weight of my presence, we continued feeling the presence of God and the weight of his presence and the glory of his presence. And we had lots of prophetic direction forming ministry teams, and I'll share that much more when we look at vision. In terms of leadership, we've gone through various phases of leadership over the years. Do you want to share anything? I'll share a little bit. Some of my role in this sort of apostolic sense of founding churches and founding, putting the foundations in, you know, it's been a struggle. You know, it's like over the years, when I first came up here, I'd worked in a hospital for 18 years in a biochemistry lab. It's like I had no contact with churches other than the church that I'd been involved with. I said to God, look, if you want me to involve with other churches, it's like you're going to have to help, because I am not confident in doing anything like that. So then it was a real struggle. And you know, in terms of over the years, we've sort of looked at how can we help facilitate the church to grow and to, in terms of leadership. And you know, basically, we looked at leadership team. We've had leadership teams. And Deb eventually sort of agreed to be part of the leadership team. Yeah. And eventually she agreed to be part of the eldership, which was eventually. But we're in a place now, we've got good solid foundations in leadership, and we're now looking to express that and to encourage as a foundation to help people grow. Graham Jones came again in 2009, and he gave us a prophetic word in that the ministries that we have as a church need to be joined to the vine of the church. So the flow of life that's in the church flows through those ministries and blesses through it. He talked about excellence, that we need to pursue excellence, and also that we shouldn't hide our light. We need to be a city on a hill. And we've looked to pursue that. And it's not necessarily easy to do that, but they're, again, prophetic word which has directed us. 2010, Chris stood up here and basically said, right, okay, we want to give testimony to what God is doing in our lives, so that releases the faith for that to be increased and to see the miraculous. And we started doing weekly testimonies. I would imagine in that book there's probably 300 or 400, I would imagine by now, 400 now, of testimonies of God's supernatural power. And we're going to continue doing that, sowing those testimonies out to see God continue to bless and pour out his blessing. We did the outreach in the library, which is a big thing for us as a church last year, taking church onto the street. So we took our worship, our flags, the dancing, out onto the street. We just went to actually be there and to demonstrate that actually we are here for the community, but we're here to claim what God has got for us as our people. And on that library square, they also have healing on the streets every Saturday. Culture of honor. that if we're going to see everyone fulfilling their destiny in God and the purpose that God has called them, we need to honor each other and to respect. Jesus said, if you receive a prophet in the name of a prophet, you receive the prophet's reward. And we need to receive each other in the gifts and calls and ministries that are upon our lives so that we can help each other grow and develop those. It's really important. And in June last year, I went to a mini conference down in Torquay with Sue Davies and Ryan Wyatt and Stacey Campbell and a few others. And it's like it turned me inside out. It's like really turned me upside down, inside out and everything. I met with God in real intimacy. And it's like the love of God touched my heart, probably like some of you experienced on Friday night. It's like I just experienced. I went down there in the car and God told me, he said, right, I want this time to be me and you. Don't want you to talk to anybody. Don't want you to be involved with anybody. Don't pray for anybody. Don't bother to get anyone pray for you. I just want to this time to be with you. So I went as Mr. Anonymous, sat there right through the whole thing, just said, God, I'm just with you. And it's like God totally transformed my heart, changed my affections, and called me to go on a 40-day fast. And for those obviously were around at the time, 40-day fast is quite a long time. But it was I had a prophetic word from Michael Bryant, which led me into this fast, and it was to see breakthroughs in the heavenly realms and to experience heaven. I went to heaven. I had about 90 different visions and revelation of heaven, and since then I've looked to try and help other people into those realms. The whole heavenly realms thing on the weekend is because we want to break through into the heavenly realms. We are spiritual people, and we are called to live in two realms, to outwork the realms of heaven here on earth, to be a portal for heaven to be outworked on earth, and some of that was taking place at the time. We're on a prophetic journey. We've not finished. We will never finish until Jesus comes. We're on a journey with him of discovery. All the ministries that we have will reflect the prophetic call of God individually and corporately. What I mean by that is you will shape what church looks like. If you fulfill the call of God on your life, you will shape how we as a church is. Yes, we have a ministry in a particular area, but actually anybody can have a ministry call from God. And if you're part of this church, we will help to facilitate that. So you might have a call to different areas than we already work in. We will not say well, that doesn't fit with us, because we fit with you, because you're the people. It's like we are open to new vision, new direction, a new ministry, because we want to hear God and we want to release what's in all of you to fulfill the purpose of God for your life. Free to know who God is, free to see your destiny, free to be who God created you to be, free to do what God's called you to do, and free to go where God's called you to go. That is what our heart is. Freedom is to release people to fulfill their destiny in God. Our vision as a church, to help people find and fulfill their purpose and destiny. People are church. They shape what church looks like. We've destructured and we've empowered you all to restructure. You don't have to ask to relate with one another, fellowship with one another. We've empowered you to do that. You have permission to be church relationally. You know, we don't have house groups, cell groups. We encourage people to meet with one another as God intends. So people don't have to come to every meeting we put on. We've got prophetic team meetings, pastoral team meetings we will have in different areas of meetings, prophetically speaking that out. More of that when we get on to vision in a couple of weeks. But actually, we want you to actually be who you're called to be. You don't have to fit in with a structure. This started as a supernatural ministry. Our roots and history in the supernatural, and so will our future be. It's like revival. Now, I just want to finish with this. We've got to a point where knowing God is more than just head knowledge. It's an encounter. It's an experience. If I had £10 for everyone who said to me, I know it up here, but not in here, I'd be very rich. Because church in general has taught people how to get head knowledge, not encounter the living God and experience God. We are here to encounter and experience God and know God intimately. At the end of the beginning of this year or end of last year, it's like we have these five heavenly rivers that are constantly flowing. I had a picture of waterfalls pouring down in this room from heaven. Five heavenly rivers, the river of life, the river of resurrection, river of the spirit, river of fire and glory. You can enter those rivers by faith anytime. Not just when we're here corporately. You can enter it because this is what God is doing amongst us. We have a healing pool where angels come and stir healing waters. Now, we've not focused that much on that. We're going to be moving much more into healing ministry in the coming times ahead. Angelic ministers assigned to us. And it's like, I know some of you have seen angels. I know you've seen angels moving amongst us, ministering. God's given and assigned a ministry angel to work with me. And I know when he's here. And we're going to move more into that in the future. And this really is the statement that God gave me on the 40-day fast. To live in and live out the manifest presence of God, his glory. We need to live in it and live out of it. It needs to flow out of us. Heaven manifested on earth. It's where we are. Where we come, we're on a journey together, and I'll pass on to you for anything you want to add.
I just actually want to go back to Mike. I haven't seen any of these slides, so I'm a bit like, oh.
Well, because I changed them this morning. That's
But I actually just want to go back to when we were in Trinity Street, which was the old building, and we used to pray. One morning we used to come together, everybody that was involved there, and we used to pray. And God gave me a prophetic word back then. It was a picture, but I saw Trinity Street, which really was just a symbol of us. And above it, there was a massive standard, this massive flag. And it was always about, you know, we are that city on a hill. We are that standard that's raised for God. And the word that God gave me at that time, which considering we were in this old, decrepit building in Trinity Street that was completely unfit for purpose, was quite strange. But what it was people will come to you from all around and look and see that you're who you are because of what God has done, and that agencies and people, strategic people in the area, would look and could not deny that God had done with that we were who we were because of what God had done. Which at that point in time, as I say, we were in this cranky old damp infested building that wasn't really any good for anything, but we were just doing what we, you know, could do at that point in time. And when we moved into this building, you know, God gave me that sense again. And frequently along the road, if you look at what has happened in this building, the funding that we have attracted, the favor that has come our way, it is nothing to do with us. It's because this place is a standard that is raised high for God. You know, this is God's project, this is God's building. Everything that happens here is because God has spoken it into being. You know, the finance that we have been granted is bonkers when you look at it naturally. And when all other things are falling apart around us and agencies are losing their jobs and people are in a crisis, God lavishes favor upon us and things just keep coming and things keep happening. And it's because this is that city on the hill, this is the standard that is raised high. And I don't say that from any, I'm not saying that through pride, and I'm not saying it through arrogance or any of those things, but God has spoken. And that's why we know, the people, you know, as a church and also involved in anything that happens here, God is our source. It all comes from God. Whatever happens in this place is because God has spoken it. When we started all those years ago, we were just Do-Goody Christians. That's the name that we had in the town, was just, and I think a lot of people looked at us and waited for us to fall flat on our faces and to fail. Do you agree with that at that time, Becky? It was, wasn't it? People used to say things. And I seriously think people expected us to fall flat on our faces. But this was of God. God had spoken. And, you know, as long as we put God at the center and we're obedient to what he says, there is no stopping what's going to happen here. There is no stopping. There is no limit, because this is God and we are that standard on the hill. And that brings its responsibility too, doesn't it? So I just felt to share that one, really. Okay. But I haven't finished.
No, you haven't. Just to say, when we moved here in 2005, Deb came out of her cupboard.
I was going to say.
Just before, when we were still in Trinity Street and I was in my cupboard, answering the phone and saying, "Watch Saunders through the glass to Jill." watch him, what's he doing? And praying all the time under my breath. And I love you, Rhea. I'm only saying because he's here, because we can talk like that. But it was true, wasn't it? It was true. And back then, you know, many, many seeds were sown. And, you know, I do believe God's going to bring more people back, because there were people that came and went all along our journey, wasn't there? I can remember one point in time we'd got involved with some people with addiction, and we were working with them, and we're doing an overcomers group, I think, in the house, weren't we? And they were growing cannabis in the roof, weren't they?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that was hilarious.
No, I did an alpha course.
Oh, an alpha course, yeah. Was it?
I was doing an alpha course in this house, and upstairs there was a skunk thing in the roof.
We learned a lot along the way. We were pretty naive when, you know, sometimes I think now I'm still pretty naive, but hey, we learned along the way, but God saw our hearts, you know. It was our hearts that changed, and we just had a real heart for people. And anyway, I was in my cupboard, and I needed an operation, and I was off work for 10 weeks to recover from my operation. And at this point in time, Dave Sams, who was fantastic that he used to work for us, he decided that he wanted to go full-time for his church and be a full-time pastor. So he left, which was always a bit like, oh, gosh, what are we going to do then? What's going to happen here? Anyway, I soon found out, because when I came back after my 10 weeks of work, I no longer had a job in the office. I was now a support worker. I was like, what? I don't know how to do that. And I was, again, you know, puffy puffy and what you're doing and all that sort of thing. But underneath it all, God just told me that I just needed to be who I was, and that I just needed to give away what actually was in my heart, which is to bind up the brokenhearted, set the captives free, release the prisoners, blah, 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 Isaiah 61. And that's really all I've ever been able to do. And through that, and I believe through my obedience, although it might have been a bit stubborn, God has actually shaped me and changed me and molded me. And I've always been able to love people, and I've said to God at that time, well, I don't know how to do this, but I can love people. And I just feel that that actually is what God has used to shape me and to change me. And one of the things when we moved here, what we wanted, or what we declared over this place, is this is a place of hope. This is a place of love. And no matter what happens out there, because people are broken, and addiction or poverty or mental health or whatever you want to say goes on out there, when people walk through this door, there's one thing that they will know, is that they're loved, that they're accepted, that the love of God is in this place. And, you know, we're not over, and we don't ram things down people's throats, but actually we have an openness, and I believe a trust in people that, you know, it's such a privilege to be able to refer you guys to Ovis and to talk about that thing. But what I really think you probably would say was, once you walked through the door, you actually felt accepted. Would that be fair to say? And I think that's one of the privileges that God has really given us here. It is a place of hope. It is a place of safety. We want to see people saved. We want to see every person that walks through that door saved, but they're on their journey too. And you know, we trust that every seed we sow is a seed that is watered, that God will water it, that it will bear fruit at some point in time in God's way. And people come and go, you know, and that's part of life. And we prefer it if they didn't come and go, and they came and they got radically saved there and then. But, you know, the time will come. But we are where we are right now. And this place is an outworking. Whatever happens in this place, it's an outworking of what God has done is in our lives. We are blessed to be a blessing. Freely we've received. Freely we give. We continue to give. And whether at the minute it's in the office, whether it's in the warehouse, whether it's up here in the day center, whether it's in the kitchen, it's just like every single person we know are blessed by the love of God reaching through them and touching them. And for me, my journey might be like, you could put a head on, get out your comfort zone, stubborn, but God will take where you are if you are open, and he will transform you and he will use you. And I think sometimes we get our heads in such a screwy place with it all about what we have to do, and God really is saying, I just want you to be. Because when we learn to be who he has created us to be, things change and we fit. And I've never had any training in any of this stuff except on the life training of like, oh my goodness, what do we do here then? But God's been our teacher. We've done what we can. We've sought advice from Life for the Word and Teen Challenge and everybody along the way, and we try and be professional in what we do. But do you know what comes through it? Everything is just that real relationship with God, and able to, and being able to pass that on. And I've just eaten my words, so probably stop there. But I just want to encourage everyone that's here, actually, that's for you too. My journey would never have looked like this in my eyes, but God's taken me one step at a time, and here I am now. And to hear you guys this morning, it's just, I cry every time I get to this point, don't I? But I don't know if I've ever would have moved from Cornwall if I knew what was ahead. But you know, I wouldn't trade it for anything. This is just the best. I can't imagine being in anywhere that's just, this is just the best. You guys are just the best. This is like, if I could have a dream, or if I could have had a dream then, to see what we see now. And I know we're at the beginning, but actually this is it for me. This is what makes me tick. This is what makes me function, is being part of your journeys and seeing what God's, being able to facilitate what God does in you. It actually is who I am. So.
Yeah, good. All right, thank you.